Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 7th of November 2015. My name's Hereward Fenton, glad to be with you. Well, today, folks, I am going to be covering a bunch of stories, but I'm going to lead with and focus on the Kunduz Hospital disaster. There's been some new information come out as a result of the Médecins Sans Frontières internal review, and they have released their own report to the general public, and I think it's a great blessing that they have done that, because by releasing their own report to the general public, it will undermine the efforts of the powers that be to distract and to derail the investigation of what appears to be a very deliberate and targeted attack, a kind of assassination. I would actually describe it as a mafia-style hit on one specific building of the Kunduz MSF hospital. Very targeted, very precise, and this, and also prolonged over a period of 1 hour. And this, of course, completely is at odds with the most recent position adopted by the US authorities to say that it was a mistake. Now, when you hear the word mistake and you hear the expression fog of war, you tend to think, well, yes, this does happen in wars, in the fury of the moment, the fog of battle, terrible things can happen. And you think, well, maybe a missile was launched at the wrong coordinates or something like that, a one-off mistake. This was not, by any definition, a one-off mistake. This was a sustained attack that took place over a period of more than an hour of a C-130 gunship circling a building, circling the hospital and targeting one specific building, which was the main hospital building where all the people who were undergoing treatment were being kept and ongoing surgery was taking place. They completely razed that building to the ground. They were clearly targeting someone or a number of people in that building for a specific reason. There is absolutely no doubt about it. I do highly recommend reading the MSF internal review. It's quite revealing and quite a shocking story to read. And it also documents the number of phone calls and frantic efforts that were made to stop the attack while it was in progress, which were all ignored. The attack continued until the building was completely destroyed. Now, I want to kind of give an overview of the misinformation that's been surrounding this. And there's a great article by Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept, which documents the way in which the Western media instantly stepped in to provide a cover story for the attack, saying that it was impossible that this could have been a deliberate attack, impossible that this could be a war crime. And why? Because the United States doesn't do that kind of thing. It's just not in their genes. It can't be a war crime because the United States doesn't do war crimes. Now, the curious thing about it is that various leaks have come through from the beginning, which indicated that it was a deliberate attack and that US Special Forces knew that there were targets in the hospital, and the MSF internal review also indicates that they were contacted by the US State Department asking if they were harbouring top Taliban leaders in the hospital. And Afghan forces themselves had indicated that the hospital was a valid and intended target due to the presence of Taliban fighters as patients. And another very interesting fact is that in the days before the hospital was attacked, almost all of the government forces who had been in there as patients were removed. And the only patients that were left were either Taliban fighters or civilians and children. The Afghan government removed its own patients in the lead up to the attack. Now, I want to play to you a couple of video clips here. One is actually a summary of an AP report that came out a few days after the attack, which has a leaked statement from an intelligence operative saying that US analysts knew the Kunduz target was a hospital, but they proceeded with it anyway. They basically knew it was a hospital, but they wanted to basically bomb it. Now, let me just play to you that clip. This is actually from October 15, 2015, and this is a very short clip. I'll read to you a little from the actual AP report as well. Here we go.
Meanwhile, the Associated Press revealed new details today about the U.S. airstrike that killed 22 patients and staff at a Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan. It said U.S. special operations analysts knew the Kunduz clinic was a medical site, but believed it was being used by a Pakistani operative coordinating Taliban activity. Doctors Without Borders has disputed that claim. At the White House, Press Secretary Josh Earnest said he was not aware of the AP's report, but pledged a complete investigation.
The president's expectation is that he'll receive a full accounting of these facts in the context of a thorough, objective, and transparent report from the Department of Defense.
Pentagon officials initially said the strike aimed to protect American troops during a firefight, but the top U.S. general in Afghanistan has since acknowledged the strike was a mistake. Former House Speaker Dennis Hastert will plead guilty in his federal hush money case.
Okay, we'll just
his attorney
leave
said
it
the
there.
Plea agreement will be submitted to.
Now, that information is derived from an Associated Press article dated October 15. And I'll just read to you, it's quite detailed, it's got a lot of information. U.S. analysts knew Afghan site was hospital from the Associated Press. American special operations analysts were gathering intelligence on an Afghan hospital days before it was destroyed by a U.S. military attack because they believed it was being used by a Pakistani operative to coordinate Taliban activity. It is unclear whether commanders who unleashed the AC-130 gunship on the hospital were aware that the site was a hospital or knew about the allegations of a possible enemy activity. The Pentagon initially said the attack was to protect U.S. troops engaged in a firefight and has since said it was a mistake. The special operations analysts had assembled a dossier that included maps with the hospital circled, along with indications that intelligence agencies were tracking the location of the Pakistani operative and activity reports based on overhead surveillance, according to a former intelligence official who is familiar with some of the documents describing the site. The intelligence suggested that the hospital was being used as a Taliban command and control center and may have housed heavy weapons. Now, the Médecins Sans Frontières report has stipulated in completely unambiguous terms, absolutely unequivocally, that there was no fighting going on around the hospital, that there were no armed people in the hospital, that the rules that they have about no guns were being observed in the hospital. So the idea that the hospital was being used as a kind of a military base is completely implausible. However, it is not implausible that there were individuals in the hospital who were working for the Taliban. And that fits in with the theory that the main hospital building was basically annihilated because they were taking out targets. It was an assassination. And when we read the mainstream media, which has kind of leapt forward with the assertion that, oh, it was a terrible tragedy, these kinds of things happen in war, it's a terrible thing, but it's a mistake. They, of course, are leading public opinion. Meanwhile, there has been no response from the Pentagon after over 1 month. When they said they would give a response within 30 days, they had promised that. There has been no explanation apart from a number of conflicting reports, which ended up with the White House spokesman saying it appears to be a mistake, and that's all that we know. No information has been let out. No information about what this AC-130 gunship was doing. Why was it circling round and round the hospital? How they could have done that when the hospital itself, the coordinates of it, the GPS coordinates, had been sent multiple times to the US military following all known protocols. That there was a huge banner on the top of the hospital that said MSF right on the roof of the hospital, so it was impossible to miss if you were from the air. And there was MSF flags on the hospital. And hospitals are known in advance as part of any kind of military operation. And this hospital had been in place since at least 2011. It was a well-established hospital. So the claim that it was a mistake, which of course is the least harmful position to take from the point of view of PR for the United States Army, it is so implausible. And if we were to go with it, it makes the US military seem so utterly incompetent that it also runs the risk of just completely destroying the credibility of anything that comes out of the US press releases or official information that they give, if they're going to continue to run with that story. But notice, there has been no further response at all. We don't even know what the ultimate answer will be. But most likely, they will prolong giving any answer for as long as possible. And this, of course, has been the pattern of the past, is that if you delay and delay and delay, then new stories pile up, new issues pile up, and it becomes easier to obfuscate. That's why it's extremely important to continue to focus on this. We are just going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Radio. And just continuing on the story here of the Kunduz hospital bombing. Now, as I said before, the MSF internal report has indicated in a number of ways that there were signs that the hospital was going to be targeted. One of them being that the government removed all of its own personnel who were patients from the hospital in the days before the attack. There were inquiries from the US State Department as to whether they were harboring Taliban leaders. And there were also visits after the attacks of Afghan special forces apparently looking for Taliban in the hospital immediately after the attack. And after the attack, a firefight did develop outside the building. And in the day following the attack, a NATO Humvee apparently smashed down the gate of the hospital and conducted a kind of a raid on the hospital. And this was the following day, and there were still some MSF staff in there. And it was almost like the hospital was under attack again. I mean, they actually smashed down the gate the following day. So quite clearly, this hospital was the subject of very deliberate and focused military engagement. Now, the way in which the media has dealt with this, and I do refer you to this great article by Glenn Greenwald, US journalists who instantly exonerated their government of the Kunduz hospital attack, declaring it an accident. This is an attempt to manipulate your mind, to basically undermine your ability to think clearly about the facts, because the mantra of mistake, accident, fog of war is just going to be continually repeated now. But that's the great thing about the MSF internal report, because it does actually completely refute that in so many different ways. Just a couple of examples of the way in which the media spins this. A quote here from the Washington Post on October 7. To think that the United States purposely bombed a hospital is evidence of a mindset that suggests such deep hostility towards America that MSF International president ought to go to work somewhere else. I don't for a minute think that the U.S. was involved in a war crime here. That's just an opinion piece from the Washington Post, October 7. From USA Today, October 11. Doctors Without Borders cheapens the value of its own indignation by raising what seems to have been a deadly mistake to the level of a wanton moral transgression. Now, let's just consider again the actual facts of what occurred. A hospital was targeted for over an hour with a heavy gunfire, and the entire hospital was destroyed, and 30 people were killed. That's the current death toll. Now, regardless of whether it was a mistake or whether it was deliberate, it is a crime of some proportion. Because you see, the whole point of having rules of engagement and having protected areas of hospitals is that this is absolutely central to the Geneva Conventions. It is essential to the position that the Western powers take upon themselves as being on the humanitarian side, as being on the side of doing what is right. And in that means actually taking a whole lot of precautions and having a whole lot of procedures and protocols in place to protect medical personnel. And that's what we believe, and that's what the media would have us to believe, and that's why they say, well, it can only be a mistake. But then it becomes a more and more implausible mistake the more and more you think about it. But another interesting point to note here, and this was raised by Glenn Greenwald in his article, is that it has been revealed that in previous conflicts that the US military deliberately targeted hospitals. We have an article here from The Nation. The historical record suggests that the US bombing of an Afghan hospital may not have been an accident. Bombing of hospitals is called routine, and that was the August 9, 1973 Newsday coverage of congressional hearings on clandestine US and ground activities in Cambodia and Laos. US commanders in Vietnam placed no restrictions on ground or air attacks against Viet Cong or North Vietnamese hospitals, a Senate committee was told. In direct testimony and letters, the veterans said hospitals often were considered targets rather than areas to be avoided, as required by the Geneva Convention on Warfare. The bigger the hospital, the better it was. This is one of the people speaking out in this report. He said he believed the hospitals were rated highly as potential targets, not because American commanders wanted to attack wounded enemy troops, but because hospital complexes were often protected by the company or battalion-sized units. Former Air Force Captain General Gerald Greven said he personally ordered bombing raids against hospitals. It was policy, he said, to look for hospitals as targets. So this assertion that we have, this bold assertion that we have from the US authorities that we don't target hospitals, well, it certainly is not historically true. However shocking and, you know, unbelievable it is, and of course a complete transgression of the Geneva Conventions, a war crime by any definition, yes, they did it in the past. I want to play to you now a clip from what I would call an insider government institutional apologist, Michael Hanlon. And this summarizes the kind of weaving and ducking of kind of transferring blame to the other side while at the same time denying that it actually happened. This is a common tactic that they used, and John McCain used it while denying that it was deliberate. He also blamed the Taliban for having happened because the Taliban had been engaged in this battle and had actually taken over the city of Kunduz. And that's a whole other topic that we could get into, is that after 14 years of military engagement, 14 years, the US is still involved in bitter territorial fighting and they're losing and entire cities are being taken over by the Taliban. This is a war that has gone on for 14 years and shows no prospect of being over. They're just deeper and deeper in the quagmire. And that itself illustrates that they are involved in something that has no logical basis. It's just it's a brutal military occupation. It's somewhat reminiscent of the Roman Empire, where they were occupying vast, you know, regions of land thousands of miles away from home, and there were constantly uprisings, and the uprisings constantly had to be put down, and there was a constant fog of war. There was a constant military imperative. That's the way empires function. When we come back, I just want to play to you this interview here with this government apologist, because it illustrates some of the ridiculous and Orwellian techniques that they use to avoid confronting facts. Here we go. We're going to break and I'll bring that to you straight after. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I'm just going to play to you a little clip here from an interview with Brookings Institution spokesperson Michael O'Hanlon. And this was from a few days after the strike. And you can just get a flavour of the way these people think. And this is just pure CIA double standard, double think. It is really straight out of Orwell. Here we go.
Well, let's start there. Doctors Without Borders says the story behind the bombing just keeps on changing. It's condemning the attack, demanding independent investigation. How likely is that? And I want to get your thoughts on all of this.
Well, first, it's a terrible tragedy. And I think that my country and NATO probably made a mistake, probably made a serious mistake in even trying to carry out this kind of an attack near a known hospital. So I'm in general disagreement with our policy, but I do not think it amounts to a war crime. There was certainly no intention of hurting innocent people. I'm not as interested in the independent investigation. I do think the U.S. military...
I just want to pause it there, because he just said two completely contradictory things. He said they made a mistake in trying to launch this attack near a hospital, when in fact it wasn't near, it was on the hospital, right? It wasn't near. They didn't like attack someplace just down the road from the hospital. They attacked the hospital. And as you can see from MS Frontier's video that they've put up, you can see the before and after, the absolutely precise nature of the attack on that hospital building. So it was an attack on a hospital. And he's saying, well, it was a mistake to attack a hospital. Well, no, it's not a mistake. It's a war crime. I mean, he's effectively admitting that they decided to target a hospital, and he's saying it was a mistake. Well, he means a mistake in the PR sense, I guess, in the sense that a criminal who commits a crime is often described as having made a mistake, as having gone down the wrong path. But it's a deliberate act, right? So it's actually a crime. But then he goes on to say immediately after that, oh, there is no evidence that they intended to do this, that it was actually a mistake. I mean, a mistake in the oops kind of definition of the word, rather than the morally reprehensible choice version of the meaning of that term. But as you can see, the meanings of words are being kind of spliced together and interchanged.
Needs to be more clear, acknowledging that this was a terrible tragedy, expressing deep remorse and sadness, and also indicating that it will do a very, very thorough and prompt investigation. But in the meantime, saying that it's quite questionable that this should have ever been allowed to happen. And in fact, that it does appear there were serious mistakes. I would say all those things right now. That's the way I look at it.
Okay, so looking at it, saying it's serious mistakes, how do you suppose something like this could happen?
Well, I think that the Afghan troops that you were referring to, who were not apparently accompanied by any Americans, but nonetheless are our allies in the fight to liberate Kunduz from a terrible occupying force that took the city illegally last week, the Taliban, we were trying to help our ally liberate a city of 300,000 from an unlawful...
Okay, I just have to pause it again there. He said a terrible occupying force, the Taliban. Okay, now... bear in mind that the Taliban, this word that is used, the Taliban were the government of Afghanistan in 2001 after the US invaded and occupied Afghanistan. And I'm not defending the Taliban. I think there's terrible things that go on among that group. And I've seen some horrendous videos of stonings and stuff recently. But they're describing the Taliban as invading and occupying a city, when the reality is that the US invaded and occupied a country. Again, it's just dizzying, the stupidity that you have to put up with when you listen to these paid spokespersons, these people that are on high salaries, just spouting utter garbage and actually being given a platform to do it on major television networks.
Lawful invader. So let's not lose sight of what happened here, and that the Afghan government has... right on its side. They're doing the correct thing, the moral thing, the legal thing. And we felt that what we could do to help them by attacking Taliban positions that were undoubtedly deliberately right next to the hospital might be helpful to them. I understand the logic.
Notice he keeps saying right next to the hospital. There was nothing targeted right next to the hospital. That is actually a deliberate lie. This makes me incredibly angry, because that is a deliberate lie that he has injected into the discussion to deflect, to distract you and make you think that maybe the bombs and missiles were actually targeted next to the hospital. They were not. And there was never any indication, even at this early stage, that was the case. He invented that as a way of distracting you from the facts, which was that the hospital itself was targeted. The main hospital, including the operating theatres, where people were actually in the middle of having operations, people in ICU, people who had severe injuries, were in that hospital, and they were the ones who were murdered.
I just don't agree with the decision, because when you have this kind of a hospital, I think you need to avoid this kind of attack close to it, even if, in your own logic, you can explain why it makes sense in some broader campaign.
Okay.
See, he's not even acknowledging that to attack a hospital would be a war crime. He is completely skirting around the central fact that if the hospital was attacked, it was a war crime. Anyway, I can't play any more of that. It's just going to make me too angry. But that whole story is extremely interesting and extremely important, and I'll put all of the notes that I've put together up on that on the website for your reference. Now, I'm going to look at some other topics here in the time we have left. I want to just briefly mention, in Australia, the No Jab, No Pay, No Way protest movement. This is a group of people in Australia who are coming together in the name of human rights, basically, to protest against the policy of the government, which was brought in under Tony Abbott, to basically deny a whole range of benefits to parents of children who do not vaccinate their kids. And there is a website here, and I will be having the organizer of this on my show probably next week. So I'm really looking forward to that, and we're going to be discussing that in detail. We are a group of individuals and parents who believe in freedom of choice and the right of all parents to make their family's medical choices free from coercion, manipulation, and blackmail. We have had nationwide peaceful protest marches across Australia. Below is a list of future ones. Please join us and stand up for parental rights and human rights. Now, there is a protest plan in Sydney on the 20th of November 2015 at 2 p.m. at 2 Holt Street, Surry Hills, which is the office of News Corp Australia. And there is some notes here on that. Do you want to let the Murdoch media call the shots for our government and our kids? If you care about what's happening, please come and attend the No Jab, No Pay, No Way protest, which will be held in Sydney at the Daily Telegraph office, where the policy was born 2 years ago. They started a non-science-based scare campaign against parents who chose not to vaccinate, and it is now turned into government policy. Mandatory vaccination for benefits serves Murdoch's interests with ties to GlaxoSmithKline. They also attack natural therapies and those who question fluoride. Join us to discuss health and science with the journalists so both sides of the issues can be heard. And there's also a protest organised in Canberra, in Glebe Park, Acuna Street, Canberra, Saturday the 21st of November 2015 at 11 a.m. And I'll put the link to that website up on our show notes. Now, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about the climate change topic, which I think is quite interesting, It's about ice cores and CO2 levels. Stay with me. I'll be back very soon.
In terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
I will come back to you with Truth News Radio. Okay, folks, last week on the ABC website, on the news website, an article was posted. Video from the vault, the hidden climate history inside Antarctica's ice. And there's nothing new in this article. It's actually just a rehash of information that's been around for at least 5 or 6 years. But it is one of those articles that pops up, which when you read it, it seems quite shocking, and it certainly is a very powerful manipulator of public opinion, because the thrust of the article is a graph that is a type of a hockey stick graph. It's not one that I'd actually seen before. It's been around for a while, but I think maybe they just dug this one up because the graph looks very alarming, and it's a hockey stick. The title of the graph is CO2 levels over the past 2,000 years in parts per million, as revealed by air bubbles trapped in ice from Antarctica's Lore Dome. And when you look at this graph, you see over the past 2,000 years what appears to be a very stable line of CO2 just being flat line, right up until the mid-19th century where it starts to pick up, and then it just becomes asymptotic as we approach the present. It just almost becomes a vertical line going up, and you're just filled with horror when you see that. And it got me thinking, and I decided to just have a look at some of the information, what we do know about CO2 from ice cores, and I went to the source of this information, which is an organization called CDIAC. Just opening the website now. And this website actually has all of the information, all of the data that was gleaned from the research. These records are maintained by the World Data for Paleoclimatology, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So it's part of NOAA. The original investigators made the effort to obtain the data and ensure their quality. And cdiac.ornl.gov. And here we have a number of graphics and graphs, and there are graphs that show carbon dioxide levels over an 800,000 year period, and when you look at that, you basically see a graph that it doesn't really demonstrate anything significant going on, because it's over a very long period of time, and if you're going back 800,000 years, what you do see is peaks and troughs. You see a regular kind of cycle of carbon dioxide, but you don't see anything that would look particularly significant for the present, because of course the scale of the graph is so big, you don't really see anything related to the last few decades or even the last couple of thousand years. It's just not visible at the resolution of that graph. But they do also have the 2,000-year record from Lore Dome, Antarctica, and that is a separate area where they've been measuring. Now, the graph here from the raw data does indeed show an increase, but it's very, very different to the graph that the ABC displays. It's not an asymptotic hockey stick at all. It's a significant rise. The methane level is quite asymptotic, but the carbon dioxide level is a significant but not extreme increase in carbon dioxide. Now, I don't know why it is that the ABC graph should look so different to the CDIAC one, because it's derived from the same source of data, and yet it's just a very, very different image. So that's just something to mark and to consider and to come back and re-examine at a later point in time. Another interesting piece of information that I only gleaned by going to the source data is that the CDIAC graph is composed of data from different sources, completely different types of data. It is not all ice core data at all. They've actually merged the atmospheric data with the ice core data. And this is very, very odd when you consider that it is presented as being ice core data. But when you actually read the data itself, and it says here in their notes, the Lore Dome, which is the 2,000-year record, is merged with modern observational data. Now, they didn't mention that in the ABC article, but it's quite significant because the observational data is the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii, which, of course, is many, many thousands of miles away from Antarctica, and it is measuring atmospheric carbon dioxide, whereas the ice core measurements are measuring bubbles of gas locked in ice. And it is not unrealistic to have some doubts as to whether those two ways of gleaning data are going to be interchangeable. And I've got another article that I want to just draw to your attention. It's quite detailed and it's very, very interesting. It's titled CS2 Ice Cores versus Plant Stomata. And in this article, which was published on whatsupwiththat.com, and it's by David Middleton, in this article he notes that there are significant differences in CO2 concentrations at different latitudes of the Earth. So if you're taking samples from Antarctica and samples from Mauna Loa Observatory, you're not going to get this. They're not the same. The CO2 levels are different. So the fact that they've merged data in this graph from those two different sources is extremely peculiar in itself. Let's leave it at that. Now, this article here from whatsupwiththat.com is very, very interesting, and it's worth a detailed read because it actually compares the two techniques of measuring CO2, ice cores versus plant stomata, and it also references a couple of other techniques which are less used as well. And what this article highlights, and what I find very important, is it highlights the fact that the ice core measurements do not have a very high resolution. They are low frequency measurements, which are sufficient for giving you trends over longer periods of time, of say tens of thousands of years, but they're quite insufficient for giving you detailed trends over shorter periods of time, even periods of time such as 2,000 years. They're not generally used for that purpose. And that's why most of the graphs we've seen basically have the very longer time frame of 800,000 years. But this graph that I mentioned earlier from the Lore Dome is one which attempts to give a more fine grain detail, but it resorts to using observational measurements for the last 30 to 50 years of the record. It does use ice core measurements for the rest of it, but one wonders, why did they resort to using atmospheric measurements? Why couldn't they continue using ice core measurements right up until the recent years? Obviously, they can't. There's some reason for that. And the article here that I'm referring you to calls into question whether the data of the ice cores for specific years, when you break it down into a single year, is actually reliable. And he compares it with the plant stomata, which is just a totally different metric for measuring CO2 based on plant fossil remains. Because the plant stomata data shows quite significant fluctuations over short periods of time. So that data actually shows that CO2 levels certainly are not constant over short periods of time, and they fluctuate wildly. The plant stomata does also indicate that there is a trend of an increase in CO2 over the past couple of hundred years. But when that is mapped against a temperature, and what we actually see is that there is actually a lag of CO2 rise of about 200 years, which is something that is consistent with other observations which have been consistently minimized or even ignored in IPCC treatments and, of course, in the famous Al Gore presentation in his film Inconvenient Truth. The data presented in this article shows that the CO2 increases that we've seen even over the past 500 years have a significant lag from temperature. So temperature reached its minimum around about 1600, and CO2 started increasing around about 1800. So I'll just leave those notes up on the website. It's very interesting to consider these points when we see these articles that appear to give you shocking, incontrovertible information. So I hope you've enjoyed our show today. I've certainly enjoyed bringing it to you, and I will be back next week with more of the same. Truth News Radio Australia, signing out. See you next week.